You're listening to WWBC Cocoa, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and friends right here in a beautiful sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere on God's magnificent planet.
That's right. On 1510wwbc.com, you can hit that listen live button and get us on any one of your streaming devices. Of course, we also download and or upload, I guess, on that website. We upload all of the shows, so you can go on to My Demand and pick any Monday and you'll get those shows as well. And then after that, we download everything. We put it on our social medias with all of the guests' bios and pictures from the show and so forth. And some great comments about what had happened, all on our social medias, on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, as well as SitaMediaInc.com, which is our website. So, again, 15 years worth of shows. We've got a lot of great topics. On the website, you can actually search by the name of the company or by the name of the person that came on the interview, which just makes it easier to be able to find people over a few years of worth of stuff.
Yeah, it's been a while. It surely is a commitment.
Yes.
Because I tell you, it takes a lot to find really great guests and fill the hour and fill the segment. But we enjoy it. And when you enjoy doing something and you have a passion for it, you know, God sends you the ability to do it.
That's right.
Today is one of those days when someone we had scheduled for our second segment couldn't make it for whatever reasons. She had things going on. And I scrambled, and I'm like, we've got to find somebody. And, you know, it's divine intervention that Stacy, your name just came up in my heart. And I'm like, I'm going to call her. And I did call a couple other people, but you responded first. And I'm like, it's divine intervention. She's coming on with us.
Right.
But for listeners who are tuning into Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, we sit here on Mondays from 1 to 2, and we have a pretty unscripted, fun, informative, very educational show. We give back to the world what we would like back, which is a lot of education, a lot of respect. We understand that freedom of speech comes with a responsibility, and we do play nice. And so if someone wants to talk about financial literacy, if someone wants to write a book, if someone wants to talk about what's going on in Brevard County, Florida, maybe they want to talk about voting, the different ways of voting. Whatever it is, we give you a platform on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And Ellen, we did miss you last week.
Yes. Busy week, unfortunately. But thanks. And all of the shows are posted, so it did give me an opportunity to catch up with a few of those as well.
Yeah. And we understand you had an issue. I mean, I myself of lately, as we get older, bolder, and wiser, we're all very careful with all our stuff.
Yes.
The more people tell us to be careful that, you know, somebody's watching, the more you have to pay attention, because someone's got your social security number, somebody's got your phone number, somebody's got your email, and you never know.
Well, and you know, you don't think about it, but I have merchandise, obviously, for the band, and every T-shirt that we've sold has my phone number on the back of it. Well, you can send somebody a Zelle, or you can ask for money from a Zelle with a phone number now, with the Zelle, Cash
yes.
App, Venmo,
but
any
okay?
of those
everything
things.
Is everything is good.
Yeah,
praise the Lord.
You
for
know
that.
Me, I get the FBI involved when
That's
I need
right.
to.
I don't blame you.
I don't mess around.
Well, for our listeners who are tuning in for the first time, that is Ellen O'Neill. She is my co-host. She's been with me for 15 years on the show. And, of course, we have Allie Tambor, who comes by and she's a cheerleader for the show, yeah. Sits with us. Danny Whiting runs our board, and we have a great show planned today. I reached out to our friends over at the Marine Resource Council, and we have Dr. Wilson, who is going to be talking with us a little bit about the Indian River Lagoon and give us an update on the health of the lagoon. And then our second segment, our friend Stacy Donovan, who is the development director, right, at New Life Mission. Okay. She's here. She's going to talk to us a little bit later about an event that's coming up. And then she's one of our four girl chat group today. We're going to talk about how we can move our country forward in a kinder, gentler, more mindful way. And what we can do as women who are aging, you know, I'm not sure, maybe over 50.
Gracefully.
We're noticing a lot of stuff in our nation that we can talk about and try to make a difference. Because, you know, I like to say we have less time on planet Earth than we have already lived.
Correct.
And it is our inherent right to leave the planet a better place. And we can use our wisdom and our experience to chat a little bit today on the second segment. So we'll do that on the second segment. And Dr. Wilson is on the line, and she's going to tell us a little bit about the Indian River Lagoon. But first, Doctor, thank you for taking the time to call in and chat with us on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having us.
I bet you wish you were here to chat with us about our second segment stuff. But anyways, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved with the Indian River Lagoon.
Absolutely. I came into conservation work as a little bit of a second act in my career. My background is I'm kind of very classically academically trained as a paleontologist. So studying Earth's past, and my specialty in that was studying ancient marine ecosystems. And I spent, you know, a couple of decades looking at everything from how sea turtles and seabirds to fish and big marine reptiles lived in a greenhouse climate, a very warm climate, 80 million years ago. And I was a university professor. I was a museum curator. And the last big project I worked on in that phase of my career was on fossil sea turtles. And I found this wealth of information on modern sea turtles. And it just really got me thinking about how we can leverage what we know about the past, about the life in the past, the ecosystems of the past, the organisms that made it or didn't make it through these big extinction events, how we can leverage that information to conserving the present and having a more positive outlook on the future. And so at that point, I decided that I needed to do more to get involved, to look forward, to look to the future. And I made the very scary leap to leave my tenure job as a professor and come into marine conservation. So, you know, I wanted something hands-on, kind of smaller grassroots style organization looking at these unique biodiverse marine ecosystems, and Marine Resources Council was just such a great fit for me and my experience and background, and they're kind of willing to take a chance on a candidate that looked maybe a little bit different than some of the others on paper.
Well, you fit right in with the Marine Resource Council because they're all about advocacy, education, and science. And a lot of us has been there for so many programs they've had. And they do amazing work right here in Brevard County, Florida.
Thank you. And I mean, I'm a little biased, but I agree.
Yeah.
But, you know, like looking at the very science-based, science-informed, data-informed basis for the conservation work, for the education and outreach, that was really the first thing that drew me to the organization. With, you know, both in the classroom as a professor, but especially my work as in natural history museums for decades, I have a lot of experience communicating scientists to non-scientists. And I think that's really where I had the good skill set to bring to an organization like MRC, where we do so much in the community, we do so much online for, you know, having science-based information to get out about the health of the lagoon and how we can all help.
Yeah. You know, oftentimes you see little kids playing with little dinosaurs, you know, toys on mm-hmm. things like that. And you wonder if their parents took the time to actually, like, get a book about dinosaurs, read to them, you know, because I think it's all those things make the world a better place when our children are educated.
Absolutely. And I've always referred to paleontology as the gateway to science. You have these big, extinct and different looking and fascinating and larger than life animals that aren't around anymore. And, you know, it just sparks the imagination. It sparks the curiosity. Kids are born scientists, asking questions, exploring the world around them, trying to find answers. And unfortunately, a lot of us lose that along the way. So the more that we can engage the kids in, you know, looking at the world around us, what's going on, what's going wrong, where they can make an impact, you know, that's going to make this generation of lifelong learners that are going to take what they learn through the rest of their experiences.
Yeah. Well, you know, my grandchild was over at our home recently, and my husband has a way, if he has a plastic Ziploc bag that he's used for fruit or something like that, it's not mm-hmm. that he's cheap. He's very conservative. So he will rinse that bag out, and then he dries it, and he'll reuse it. And my mom used to do that a long time ago with plastic bags, right?
Yeah. Do it now.
And I
right.
noticed that yeah. that you all are celebrating a plastic-free July. So talk to our listeners a little bit about conserving those kind of things, because people look at you doing that and they're like, oh, why are you doing that? Because the kids are like, just throw it. No, you don't throw it away if you could reuse it, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, we kind of all, I mean, I'm a kid of the 80s and 90s. So I was brought up on the reduce, reuse, recycle. You know, environmentalism got so big in the 90s. And, you know, that's been ingrained in me. And you can live by it in different ways, you know. And all three of those, the reduce, reuse, recycle, are all important part to the equation. So, you know, I do have plastic bags. My parents did the same thing. You know, it wasn't for financial reasons necessarily, but, you know, they reused their Ziploc bags. And, you know, I picked up that habit from them. But I've also tried to transition to using alternatives. So maybe like a reusable silicone bag for a sandwich, or more like glass-based Tupperware for storage. And it's really, you know, all these little things that we can do. So much of what lagoon conservation or environmental conservation about is trying to encourage behavior changes in, you know, the general population, so that we're thinking about our actions and we're thinking about the potential consequences of our actions. So if we can think about, you know, encourage people to think about plastic not as a single use, but as something that is reusable or could be replaceable by something not plastic, then those are the behavior changes that are going to make a really lasting difference within, you know, an ecosystem like the Indian River Lagoon, where we're just using less of things that end up as pollutants.
Yeah. And usually when we talk about the Indian River Lagoon, most people have the picture in their head, and they're thinking, oh, there's the lagoon with a lot of muck, with a lot of boating, mm-hmm. with a lot of trash. There's a lot of stuff going on in the lagoon, algae blooms and all that. So talk to our listeners. Tell us exactly where is the Indian River Lagoon estuary located, and how, and a little bit, educate our listeners a little bit about the lagoon.
Absolutely. The Indian River Lagoon, so it takes up about 40% of the east coast of Florida. It runs, it touches six different counties, from Ponce Inlet in Volusia County to the north, and then it runs 156 miles down to Jupiter Inlet in Palm Beach County in the south. So it is a very long lagoon, but it's pretty narrow. You know, it's only, you know, less than 1 to maybe 3 miles across, and it's also shallow, except where it's been dredged out for the intercoastal. You know, the average depth is 3 to 4 feet. So it is the shallow, narrow, long body of water that has typically been characterized as the most biodiverse estuary in North America. And that just means that it has a high number of species of plants, animals, microorganisms that live in it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this really special place because of this biodiversity. It expands two different major climate systems, or between kind of the temperate or the tropic and the subtropic. And then it has the influence of water from land and fresh water, and then the influence of water from the ocean with salt water. So it is a brackish estuary with lots of different organisms, plants, animals, 50 different threatened or endangered species in it. So it is a vital part of our ecosystem, from everything from recreation to storm protection of our properties to providing habitat for our commercial and recreation fisheries. That is well worth preserving over time.
And is it fresh water or is it salt water?
It's both. So it's what we call brackish water. So mm-hmm. when the fresh and the salt mix together, it's called brackish. And it's extremely variable in its salinity, both over space and over time. After really big rain events, we have a stormwater problem. So we have a lot of water that falls on land that flows into the lagoon. So after big rain events, we might see a drop in salinity where rivers and our drainage systems are dumping into the lagoon. When it's dry, during dry season, salinity can go up because maybe there's evaporation and there's less water going in, or less fresh water going into the lagoon. And then it also varies kind of north to south. You look at something like the very northern stretches of the lagoon, called Mosquito Lagoon. It's part of the system, but it's a little bit isolated. It's very salty up there. There's not a whole lot of rivers and freshwater flowing into it. But then maybe you go down south to like St. Lucie, Martin County, and you have inlets that connect with the ocean, but you have kind of the St. Lucie River coming in. So you might have different salinity dynamics down there with a lot more freshwater input.
You make somebody want to leave the studio and get in a little boat and go into Indian River Lagoon.
And is the St. John's adding to that as well? Is that connected somehow?
So yes and no. So historically, no, they're in different watersheds. So, kind of the divide on land where it was, everything on that, all the rain that falls on land, if that ends up in the lagoon, that's the Indian River Lagoon watershed. Anything that falls on land and ends up in the St. John's, that's the St. John's River watershed. And there has historically been a divide that separates those two water bodies. Humans have then come in and with our engineering capabilities have changed that a little. So with different canal systems, drainage system, changing the topography as we develop, we've mixed up those watersheds a little bit. There's a big project that was celebrated last year in the Melbourne area where kind of Crane Creek, so right. southern part of Melbourne, where they just kind of re-engineered their initial engineering so that water that fell in kind of the West Melbourne area actually now drains back into the St. John's River, which is a historic flow. And so that fresh water is now going to the St. John's, where it originally went, rather than going into the Indian River Lagoon. And that might sound weird, but, we just talked about the lagoon is brackish water. It's a delicate balance of fresh and salt. So a huge influx of fresh water from land can actually be considered a pollutant to the lagoon. So it's kind of weird to think about fresh water as a pollutant, but,
it changes the dynamic and the salinity,
exactly,
like what you're saying, and where animals are used to a certain compound or, combination that's... It changes
exactly.
It.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Oysters.
And then that takes us right into where this month, I know this in July, you guys are celebrating the 35th anniversary of the Lagoon Watch.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess there's a lot of education going on at the Marine Resource Council about what we can all do with our yard waste or the rain barrels. Talk to us a little bit about Lagoon Watch and what's happening for the 35th, I guess, it's an anniversary.
It is. So Lagoon Watch is our citizen science volunteer program. So we have volunteers all through all six counties that go out, and every 2 weeks now they go out and they collect water samples, and then they collect water quality data out of those water samples. So temperature, salinity, pH. We are now doing nitrogen and phosphorus testing, so looking at nutrient pollution. We'll be re-adding dissolved oxygen, so is there enough oxygen for the fish in the water? And they collect these data and then send them to us at MRC, and then we can distribute those data, either use them in educational programming, and then some of those data we actually send to the state, to the big state data repository. That's used for scientific publications, that's used for policy making and assessing these different water bodies. And so this is a 35-year program. We started it in 1991. It was the first lagoon-wide water quality monitoring program in the Indian River Lagoon. And, you know, we're still operating it today with a huge cadre of volunteers up and down the lagoon. So we're really proud of it. We've recently gone through a bunch of upgrades to it to meet the data quality standards that the state requires, so that the data our volunteers and scientists are collecting can be even more impactful to inform policy, to inform scientific studies. But yeah, I mean, you're exactly right. The water quality, what's going on in the lagoon is a huge, you know, is the basis upon which our entire education program and advocacy is based on. And so one of the things that we launched in 2025 is called Low Impact Living. It's based on low impact development, storm water management, paying attention to what happens to water as it falls on land. Because if we can keep water on land, if we can clean water on land, then it won't ever be a problem in the lagoon as a pollutant.
Right. And all that comes with education, right? And I remember when we lived, for 25 years in Tortoise Island on the river, and mm-hmm. my husband used that opportunity to teach the kids about mangrove and nitrogen and the nutrients on the bank of the river. And, you know, there were people that we knew when to cut the mangroves, if you should cut it. Mm-hmm. So, and I know that this month, we just have a few minutes left, and I know that this month is also a month that you're talking about the mangroves. So right. Educate our listeners a little bit about those little plants that we see on the riverbanks, mm-hmm. if you can.
Absolutely. So mangroves, you know, they're essential, kind of the first line of defense in our lagoon. They protect the land side from storm surges, from wind, from waves. So they prevent erosion. They keep our land in place. And then they protect the lagoon from all of the water running off of land, because they are great at absorbing nutrients like nitrogen and phosphorus, heavy metals. They are 3 to 5 times more capable of, or better at capturing carbon than even a rainforest. And so they're essential parts of these ecosystems, but we've lost about 80% of our mangroves since the 1950s in the Indian River Lagoon to development and to mosquito impoundments and things like that. And so, you know, we do a lot of mangrove-based restorations. We have a large nursery. But really, we want people to know that these are important, that if you want fish in the lagoon, if you want shellfish, so crabs, clams, oysters in the lagoon, if you want seagrass in the lagoon, you have to have those mangroves. They're just an essential part of that.
Or if you want to go boating. Ecosystem. I mean, we watch on 4th of July how many people were enjoying the river, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's always been that advocacy is like a very essential part of safeguarding our environment. And it's something we have to do for future generations. Tell us, if you can, in a couple of minutes, what can we do to inform our listeners what we all should be doing to help the health of the Indian River Lagoon?
Yeah, so, I mean, this is where that low-impact living comes in, is that we can all play a role. You know, we can all think about where rain falls on land, and we want to keep the water on land, and we want to clean it on land. So things like native plants, You know, they are so powerful for holding soil in place, for absorbing nutrients, for absorbing stormwater. Native trees, you know, our live oaks can store, you know, up to 10,000 gallons of water. You know, rain barrels, so slowing the water that comes off of our roof and, you know, moving it into our gardens, moving it even into our lawn so it's not running into storm drains. You know, picking up after your pet so that those nutrients, nitrogen and phosphorus, in addition to bacteria, don't enter into the lagoon. So there are all these little things that we can make in our everyday lives that aren't going to take time. They really aren't going to take money, but they can really make a big impact. You know, using a car wash versus washing a car on your driveway so those chemicals in that water doesn't end up back in the lagoon in our storm systems.
You know, this morning, Doctor, I was speaking to somebody at the gym about you coming on the show, and the person said to ask you, what is causing so many of the ponds in our area to have so much algae? Like, is it the heat? Is it what's going on in the ponds that so many people are having a hard time trying to keep up?
So it's fertilizer. So things that we put on our grass and our gardens to make them grow, nitrogen and phosphorus, are the same things that algae needs to grow. And so when we have these ponds in our neighborhoods and we mow our manicured grass directly down to the pond and we fertilize this grass to make it green, you know, all of that, the grass clippings, the nitrogen and phosphorus end up in these ponds. And that becomes food for algae. So all these ponds have, I mean, algae is everywhere, and that's fine. Like, we need low levels of algae. It's a essential part of the food chain. But when you get the conditions of too much food for the algae, then they're going to explode in populations. And then you get hot, and that changes the water chemistry. And so then you have these algae blooms, which then causes these fish kill events. Because all of the oxygen gets pulled out of the water. You know, it's just kind of this cascading collapse of the pond ecosystem that starts with having too much food for the algae. And so, you know, you see people come in and aerate, and that can help. But other things that we need to do are having things just, you know, 3 feet of not mowing your grass around the end of the pond. And that grass can then absorb nutrients, and kind of protect the pond from getting way too much of that nitrogen and phosphorus in it.
Wow.
But really,
that's
it all comes down to too much food.
That's interesting, yeah. Because we are seeing a lot of that in Lake Washington. And the other thing is, you know, a lot of us are going to the city, to the county commission meeting on Thursday, because there's a developer that's coming to Lake Washington at the old radio station. They're planning to put up over 60 units there. We had our neighbor was on the show last week, Diane. She was talking about it, and a lot of people are talking about the impact of so many homes on that piece of property when you don't have enough drainage system, septic or sewer or any kind of infrastructure. So I wish people could actually listen to you, because what you're saying about the stormwater and the drainage and all that, it ties not just into the ponds in Lake Washington, but the Indian River Lagoon as well.
Absolutely, you know. So, you know, different ponds go different ways, but these ponds started as stormwater ponds. So they keep the rainwater out of our yards, out of our houses, our garages, and puts it somewhere very quickly. That's a pond. But ultimately, that pond does flow into either the lagoon or the St. John's River. And so we don't want dirty water in these ponds, and we don't want too much water than these ponds can handle, because either it just flows too quickly or it ends up flooding our properties. So that infrastructure and the site design is so important for managing rainwater when it falls, so that it doesn't become problems for these ponds, these surface waters, these canals. Like, I don't have a pond in my neighborhood, but I have a canal behind my house that eventually connects up to the Indian River Lagoon. So even though I'm a couple miles inland, what I do in my yard will impact the lagoon.
So, and that's so it's important. Fair to say you don't have a company that comes out and spray your lawn.
You know, if you have native plants, you don't need fertilizer. And if you have native plants, you don't need to water as often. So, you know, there's a lot of these kind of going back.
So doctor, what is the answer for the manicured lawns to look so good? Because in some neighborhoods, the HOA will send you a nasty letter if your grass is brown or there's a patch. And then people get nervous and they're like, oh, my God, I got to take care of the lawn. So What is the alternative for when you get the nasty letter from the HOA?
You know, it's the education and advocacy to the HOA itself. We are starting to see some changes within huge HOAs, even the Sun Tree HOA, you know, up in Northern Brevard or Central Brevard, where, you know, it's 4,400 homes. It's pretty much its own municipality. And they're making changes to embrace things like native plants and Florida-friendly landscapes and working with companies that aren't going to spray chemicals into their ponds or spray chemicals on the sides of their ponds. And so it's really just kind of working with that education and advocacy of the homeowners, you know, to go to their HOA, to run for the board of their HOA and start making changes. So it is possible. It's just overcoming this is how we've always done it type of mentality and thinking about what better long-term best management practices and solutions may be.
Well, every organization needs good volunteers. They need people to donate time, effort, money to help. How can we help the Marine Resource Council? Do you have a website that we can give to our listeners? And you are awesome. I'd love to have you on the show again because I feel like I'm in a class.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, thank you. But yeah, so we're pretty easy to find. We're Love the IRL, so Indian River Lagoon, lovetheirl.org. We have links to our volunteer opportunities. You can sign up for our newsletters. And then, you know, we are a nonprofit. So, yes, we survive based on donations. So opportunities to donate there as well. But I would love to come back. You know, I can talk about the lagoon and stormwater and native plants all day long.
We love to hear about it because it is where we live and we definitely want to take care of it. That's one of the things about Viewpoint with CETA and Friends is we try and make sure that everyone gets educated about all of the things that affect all of our living here in Brevard County. So thanks again,
absolutely,
Dr. Wilson, for joining us. We're going to take a minute and have a brief introduction into our sponsors, and then we'll be right back after these messages with Viewpoint with CETA and Friends.
Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County and Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000, 321-268-5000, or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Choctaw Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County. Contact Choctaw Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345. Located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne, that's Choctaw Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff.com. Call the professionals at Choctaw Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. I guess Ellen and I got a little carried away there that segment. We want to learn about paleontology and dinosaurs and bones and everything.
Well, I've been learning so much about the healing properties of natural things. So that's kind of where it went to. And then recently, it's been more about sea life and about the healing because there's regenerative properties, right?
There is.
Because like a starfish... If they breaks off one of its legs, it can regenerate, right? We have little dinosaurs, little lizards that regenerate their tails, you know? I'm amazed at all that stuff.
Well, for listeners who are tuning in, this is Sita Biggie, and this show is so much fun today. I came in, I was so rushed because I had to run to my daughter's house and do something for her, and since Scotty and Kim are great supporters of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, I didn't want to say no in case they pulled the funding.
They would.
Yeah. So I'll cook them some curry chicken for it.
There you go.
We are heard on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere, Ellen.
That's right. 1510, WWBC.com.
Right.
And you can get us live. Just hit that listen live button and you'll get us live on any one of your streaming devices. And then, of course, we share it all so you can download all of the shows. Our social medias as well as the website, cedamediainc.com.
You know, I went to Suntree, Scotty and Kim again. You know, I better be nice to them. They bought tickets because they're members at the Suntree Country Club, and it took like 13 or 14 of us to the 4th of July dinner and fireworks. And all these people kept coming up to me and they're like, "We love your show and we love your Facebook." And I'm thinking, what on earth? I don't remember the names. Oh. It's so hard because it was so many people come on our show.
Yeah.
And so many people tune in.
Yes.
And so I'm like, well, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. And then I'm like, should I run and say, hey, what's your name? But that's why our show is fun, because we're real. We're humble.
Exactly.
We understand our mission on planet Earth.
That's right.
We have a life with purpose, and we may not have found it in our 20s and 30s and 40s, but now we're 50s and 60s. We're finding it. And it's so wonderful to be able to give back, not just to Brevard, but to the world.
Yes.
You know, and that's why Stacy is here. Stacy Donovan, talk to us a little bit about what you do at New Life Mission, and then we'll go right into our segment, Girl Talk.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for calling me and asking me last minute to come on your show. I'm actually laughing at myself because earlier you guys mentioned getting to be older, and so now I'm actually in that. If you invited me, then I must be old enough to be considered.
You're in here with us,
which is slightly concerning.
It's a gift. The gift of aging. It really is.
It is. And I've really grown up. Like, I really know who I am today. So I'm grateful. And I'm happy to be here. I'm the Director of Development for New Life Mission, formerly Brevard Rescue Mission, for 17 years. We have been serving single mothers with children who are homeless or at risk of becoming homeless. And I just love the organization, and just to be a small part of the transformation that happens there, I'm blessed.
Yeah, and you just had a nice event at the Hilton, and you have another one coming up.
We
talk to our listeners about the event and how they can get a ticket And again, you're always looking for people to donate time, energy, and effort because it is a good cause. You know, like my mom used to say, look at your fingers. They're not all even. You don't know what can befall you or a friend or a family member or a neighbor. And they may need a place, a safe place, right? A faith-based place as well.
Yes, we are a life transformation program. We're not an emergency shelter. So it really is if you're ready to change your life, New Life Mission can help you do that. Our event, we're actually doing our third annual Opening Doors for Women on Thursday, October 8th from 6 to 9 p.m. The last 2 years, it has been held at the American Muscle Car Museum, and we're so grateful to them for hosting our nonprofit event. This year, we have to go look for another event, and so we found that just very close by here at the Space Coast Health Foundation at the Center of Collaboration at 1104 Rockledge Boulevard. So we have a new venue, a fresh event format, and powerful stories of transformation. And it's going to be different than the ones that we've hosted to before.
What date is this one?
Thursday, October 8th.
So we have enough time. And so the evening or luncheon?
It is a 6 to 9 p.m. Oh. It's evening. We have our presenting sponsor is the Galleria of Art and Photography. We have sponsorship opportunities. We're looking to partner with restaurants that want to come and create a chef's experience. We plan to have a behind closed doors exhibit. So as people are walking into the venue, they're learning about homelessness and why some of these women find themselves homeless. And then, of course, Opening Doors for Women will be a walkthrough into the event. Oh. About how they can get involved. And so you can go to newlife-mission.org/opening-doors-for-women for more information. And ticket sales are going to be opening up later today.
Right. And the good thing about the place in Rockledge that you're having at the center, there's a lot of parking. You've been there before.
I've played there before.
Yeah, it's wonderful. I love that venue.
Yeah, it's a great venue.
And they really go all, I mean, the reception area, everything is perfect. I think it's a great venue.
Yeah, we're really excited
about it. And it's probably a little bit cheaper too, I think. I'm not sure, but I know it's, the Hilton is getting expensive. So is the Crown. A lot of people used to have events at the Hilton and the Crown.
Yeah.
You know?
But that venue is perfect. It's centrally located. Rockledge Boulevard is actually US 1. So if you're familiar with that, it's right. It's really, you know, like Cocoa Village area, kind of in that
spot. If you give Ellen the information, our show would, we would run that ad on behalf of us for them, you know, until October. We don't mind because we love her. Yeah. You know what? The New Life Mission has always supported our show. And you guys believe in what we do and we believe in what you do. So it's really good. But before we get to our girl chat, how does the New Life Mission balance the spiritual guidance and the practical life skills area? Because we know it's Christ-centered, and it should be. It's faith-based. But how do you balance both?
So we are faith-based, but we're not here to force what we believe on anyone. New Life Mission is here for anyone that needs help. And for any woman that wants to change her life, we offer life skill classes, financial coaching, career counseling, education, job readiness, and Bible study is one of those life skill classes. They are all required for them to attend, but it's really up to them. We believe in giving people an opportunity to learn about what we believe, and ultimately that's their choice. It's not a requirement to believe one thing or another to enter the program or to exit.
Yeah. And the good thing is when people leave there, you really boost their self-esteem. You give them skills and you help them with their children. I've been there and I think it's beautiful. But anyway, so we'll start off a girl chat on this segment with Miss Ellen. Ellen, is there anything that you have going on right now in your mind, body, and spirit that you feel our listeners can listen and tune in, learn from us today, and share the experience that you've got in your head, something is going on that you want to make a difference?
With people in general, because I am in the entertainment industry 5 nights a week, and I get to see a whole lot of folks, I think it goes back to sort of what you said, that independence and the confidence of being able to go out by yourself. I have lots of girlfriends now that are not necessarily partying up with five or six other people. They're actually coming out and enjoying their time by themselves, still in a group, but they're still there. They come solo. They buy their own dinners. They're seeing other people around.
They're not dependent on someone else for their happiness.
So my we always talk about loneliness, right? And I am always concerned when I think that a friend is not coming out because they're lonely, right? They're feeling that lonely feeling. And what I can tell you is that Brevard County offers so many activities in town that. And now the public transportation is getting a little bit better. It's not fantastic, but it's
Uber.
A little bit better.
If you want a drink, you could Uber.
And honestly, a lot of my friends are getting electric bikes. And even in the heat, it's not horrible. Like, the electric bike thing is kind of working. But they're finding themselves getting to places so that they can have camaraderie and some type of fellowship, whether it's at a restaurant or whether it's at the park or whether it's at an art exhibit or wherever it happens
to
be.
Well, I have to tell you, your following is huge. And yeah. I actually pray for your voice to stay forever, because every time I meet someone, they'll say, boy, that Ellen can sing. And I've seen what you do when we go to events or galas that you're booked to play, you and your band. And you're a great friend. You're a wonderful human being. And people love you. And they love coming out to hear you sing. And I think it's great that you offer that to people in Brevard. It's such a talent, gift, and a gift.
Well, and even past that, though, my look always, when I'm looking out into the crowd, I'm always looking for the people that are not, you know, that are not kind of engaging. And I always go over. That's one of my things. On break time, I'm not sitting in my car or going to get a drink or any of that. I'm walking the crowd and talking to everybody and how's everybody
and
doing?
And I don't know how you do it and you don't consume alcohol and you don't eat meat.
I don't eat meat.
But you're in that environment where people do drink and they do eat cheeseburger, hamburger, fries, and you're so good. Do you bring a lunch?
I do, because I eat at home a lot. And that's also what saves me money. So from a confidence standpoint, there isn't anything that keeps me from doing what I want to do. Because I always have that confidence that I know that I'm not going to eat there. I'm going to save that money.
Boy, that's a whole show. Ellen is two shows that just
before I go out, I know I plan. You know, and I on Sundays I plan my week. I plan my meals. I know what we're going to have. I go grocery shopping because my life is scheduled as such that I don't have time to think about what I'm going to make for
dinner tonight.
Yeah,
and you make time for us for the show.
I make time for everything that's important.
That's right. And Stacey, I'm sure you have a pet peeve as well. I mean, we're all aging, right? I feel like as I get older, I'm bolder. I'm wiser. I'm taking control of my life, whatever is left of it on planet Earth. And I wish I had woken up before to feel this way, but I like who I am today. I like it. What about you?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. I feel like I've been through a couple of different identity crises, and I kind of see that's a kind of a common theme for people in general, especially women. And even I'm a mom of three girls, so I see it with my own children. And I feel like for those that are feeling lonely, and I really think that the root of the issue is that we're all in an identity crisis, right? Who are we and where are we finding our value, right? If you find your value in the relationships that you have with other people or how many friends you have or how many likes you have or followers on social media, if our identity is tied to those things, then it's never going to work. So really knowing who you are and where your identity is found. I'm very comfortable with who I am, except now as I'm getting older, right? Like, I'm deaf, I'm blind, my hips hurt all the time.
Yeah.
So I have the gumption, like, I want to go out and do all of
it's
these
like,
things,
yeah,
but my body.
You look in the mirror and you're like, where are you?
My body just wants me to stay home and go to sleep.
Yeah.
But I'm home. The 4th of July, I was taking photos of Mel Boom on my television and the Macy's, and I was sending them to my kids, like, look at the fireworks show from my couch.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
What about you, Allie? I mean, you must have a pet peeve. You've lived a little bit longer than we have, and you're still smiling, and you're still positive. Every Monday when you show up here, you've got a smile on your face, and you brighten up all day.
Well, thank you. I stay occupied, and I'm happy with staying occupied with me. And I live in a old folks home, And we have cottages there. So I've got two big bedrooms, two big bathrooms, living room, porch. You know, it's very much very comfortable. And my grandkids come. And so I'm reveling in all of that. But I busted my tail my whole life. And damn it, I'm going to do what I want to do now.
But Ali has spoken. I like it. Well, you know, for me, because I work with the elderly and I talk to a lot of people at the gym or the aircraft, wherever I go, people just gravitate. They want to chat. If you make that eye contact, people know you want to chat. And what I hear, people are worried about aging parents. A lot of folks are worried about homelessness. A lot of folks are worried about, you know, their hormones are dropping. We're getting older. We have ageism in the workplace. A lot of people are worried about the social media replacing a babysitter or replacing a grandparent in a home. And Stacey, you had talked about that earlier with social media, how some people use it as babysitters.
Yeah, as a stay-at-home mom for about 18 years with my three kids, you know, they weren't allowed to have social media until they were either 18 or able to pay for their own phone bill. And although that was really hard, just as a parent, to have to tell your kid no all the time because, you know, schools are using it. Groups and social and sports clubs use social media to keep in touch with the kids. So it was really hard, but probably the best decision that my husband and I made for our kids. You know, they're good girls that are able to have face-to-face conversations with people. They're great. They have great work ethic. And I think a lot of the younger generation today is kind of missing that in-person. And, you know, I'm big on volunteering and giving back, right? So you've got these kids that need school hours for volunteering. And you've got these people who are older, who are lonely, who might not be with their family, that just need somebody to sit with them and listen. There's lots of great nonprofit organizations like New Life Mission as well, and so many other great missions that could really use help. And so it just seems like there's a need, but then there's also kids that need hours. So how can we bridge that gap? And then what a life lesson for these kids to get to hear stories from someone who's lived their life already. And I love being with elderly. I just have such a deep love and connection to them because they're just so special and unique, and it seems like they're still
insightful.
Yeah. Well, we had Jennifer Barton on with seniors, helping seniors, and she got a person from our show. Somebody went in and put an application. And it's so true. You know, I remember once asking one of the elderly people that I take care of, what is the secret to living to over 100? And it's always Jesus Christ or faith. Well, here in America, they say Jesus, right? And oatmeal every day.
Oatmeal?
Yeah.
Okay.
And an apple.
What kind of oatmeal?
And
the
an
maple
apple.
Brown sugar.
Apple. On the face yeah, out. And an apple. And then they take it one step further. A lot of people tell you it's just being positive. Like I have this way. If somebody says, how are you? I'm like, oh, I woke up today. And I really mean it, because what is the alternative? The crematorium or the earth, right? And so I saw something on Facebook recently, and I've been sharing it a lot, where it says, when you're born, you're given your first bath by a stranger. And when you die, your last bath is given by another stranger. And it's so true. And so if you look at the interim from the birth to death, you wonder, well, we're all human beings. And if you cut our skin, we all bleed red.
Just do something right with the dash.
So what can we do to make the world a better place, right? And I come up with, well, if you go to bed with a full stomach, if you have health insurance, if you have a job, if you're able to pay your bills, your neighbor up the street should have the same. And if you're able-bodied, two arms, two legs, you have your hearing and your sight, go to work, mm-hmm. right? Or volunteer, but do something. I think that when you do something, you feel better about yourself. Mm-hmm. When you give back, right? Because you get back from life what you put out. Mm-hmm. If you sit down at home and you say, poor me, and you're negative all the time, that's the environment you're creating for yourself.
So there was a motivational speaker at one point, and it could have been Tony Robbins. It could have been several others, because I invest in those a lot. And they say what you focus on grows. So if you focus on negativity, negativity is going to grow. If you focus on solutions to problems, the solutions start appearing faster than you could ever imagine. And if you focus on your health is going to get better. You know, even those little small little things of moments that you can just do something for yourself. So that's my whole theme and my mantra in life is whatever I'm focusing on. And if I feel my brain going and spinning in something else, I say, okay, whatever I'm focusing on grows. So I never say things like, oh my gosh, I'm so busy. I never say things like that. Right. Or I never say, oh, I'm so overwhelmed. Because the overwhelm just keeps coming.
Right.
So what I say is, I'm scheduled. I know what I'm supposed to do. It might take me a little bit longer, but I'm going to get it done.
That's true.
And I just know the confidence and the ability to be able to do it.
Well, positivity, to me, it increases with practice.
Absolutely.
Right? And what I find, and I know, Stacey, you might say this, you do this as well, but I find what I do in the mornings, a lot of people have their phone and they schedule stuff in their phone. I do that as well. I'll put what I'm doing on my phone. But I love making a good old-fashioned list. And I feel important. As I make my list, I draw a line through it and I sign my initial. Like, I made a list last week. Gym, bank, call so-and-so, wash the big pot outside. You know, then I had to do something for my husband. And as I did it, I signed it. And then my husband, wow, that's a lot of stuff you did. It wasn't a lot of stuff, but it's what I do. And I think it's good when you make that physical list. Do you make a list as well?
And I just want to say one thing before you answer that question. When you cross it off like that, that's an endorphin rush. That actually happens in your head.
I swear to God.
It is.
You're so right. Because like today, I had my list for today, right? Mm-hmm. And then, of course, Kimmy called and she wanted something. So I added it to the list. And then I had 6 things done before I got here. And I'm rushing. But then I'm thinking as I'm driving, be careful. You don't want to get a ticket to add to your list to go to the courthouse,
exactly, right?
But do you make a list too?
I do. And I think, you know, if we're all 50 plus here, then I think we would agree that we're all list makers, but we still like paper. Not everybody is like that. So I would agree that just find your thing. Really just prioritize the things that are important to you. And then I think Nike just had the best. Just do it.
Right. Just do it.
What about you, Allie?
Well, Dr. Seuss did too. He said, once begun, the job's half done.
Yeah, right? That's so true.
I love Dr. Seuss.
And what about you, Allie? Do you make a list?
Yes, but I don't make it by writing it. I make it by piling up everything that's I'm going to need to do what I need to do today.
Right.
So I just go down through the list. And that way I never have to say anything about I didn't finish, you know, because there's never one that's in the number one spot.
And Ellen, so you do believe when you cross it off and you put the initial, that is an endorphin rush. Because
it's true.
That's exactly how I feel.
It's true. Yeah. So actually making the list might give you like a sense of overwhelming a little bit because you're like, oh my gosh, the list is so long. But once you start crossing those things off, it's adrenaline rush. I'm all about the adrenaline
rush.
Right.
And you know,
I don't get it anywhere
else. Before we go off air really quick, I don't know if anybody saw that the president this morning announced a $1,000 bond for children. I think it's a great idea. If anybody's out there.
I haven't read into it yet.
Yeah, I think if anybody's out there and you have $1,000 hanging around, call Stacy. Because there's a lot of kids at the New Life Mission that could actually use that. In 20 years, that will grow. And then what they're saying is you could add to it. I think it's a wonderful idea. I wish I would have a grandchild coming from California one of these days, and then I could buy one of those $1,000 bonds.
There you go.
But anyway, give them the website for New Life Mission, if you want.
Stacy?
Yes.
New Life Mission website.
www.newlife-mission.org.
Right. And I'll give them the website for our show if anybody wants to tune
absolutely.
In and listen.
Yes, absolutely. SeedMediaInc.com is the website for the show. So we post all of our pictures and all of the bios of all of our great guests. And of course, the downloads are there available. We are at like 18 and 19,000 downloads a week these days. So
I want
it's
you to
awesome.
Read that. That's the best thing I've
Never
seen.
Never become a bandage in someone's life. Bandages are thrown away after wounds heal. So don't be the Band-Aid. Just be the helper. Be the person to walk beside them. Thanks again, everyone, for tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We are here each and every Monday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on your radio dial as well as online, 1510 WWBC.com. We'll see you next week.